Welcome to the Clubhouse with Shane Bacon. I'm your host, Shane Bacon. This week's Clubhouse podcast with LPGA Commissioner Mike Wan is brought to you by Ogio. Their Cirrus cart bag weighs an unbelievable 4.8 pounds, making it as light as a cloud in the sky. As someone who had a cell phone ruined by nasty weather a few months ago, seeing a cell phone sleeve as one of the features in the Cirrus golf bag makes me smile, and that's just one of the many features in this everything you need more cart bag. Ogio continues to roll out necessary designs for golfers and travelers, so head over to ogio.com, O-G-I-O.com, and browse their excellent products. Ogio, exactly what you're looking for. And I'll say it, it was an interesting week in the world of golf. A lot of big names missed out on the weekend. Of course, Tiger did. Number one in the world, Jason Day, missed the cut. Dustin Johnson wasn't there. Ricky Fowler, Brooks Koepka, PGA Championship winner Jimmy Walker also missed the cut. The guys that did make the cut tried their hardest to make this thing interesting coming down the stretch, including just the insane finish there from John Rahm, including that putt that I'm sure will be in the running, not just for golf shot of the year, but definitely for putt of the year. I mean, that thing was an absolute bomb from the back of the green on 18 for Eagle, a really incredible finish. I will say this. I don't know what it is about the Farmers Insurance Open, but it does always seem to be very, very similar every year. I mean, you think back to last year, really tough conditions, Brant Snedeker with one of the rounds of the year in that final round to win, of course, Rahm with the 65 right there. But let's just listen. My buddy Brendan Porath at SB Nation penned a great recap and said this about the Farmers Insurance Open and, of course, about Torrey Pines in particular. I'll send the link out on the Clubhouse Twitter account so you guys can check this out. But here's what he said about Torrey Pines. I want to hear if you agree or disagree. Quote, "The Rees Jones design of this course has been widely panned in its conventional wisdom now that he ruined a pretty good thing. What we have now is just a bunch of elevated greens protected by bunkers and a whole lot of pin placements that are tough to access. We don't demand birdie fest every week, and a tough test may have been what we needed after multiple sub-60 rounds in the preceding 2 weeks. But there's a difference between being a tough test that's exciting to watch and one that just becomes a sputtering slog," end quote. That's from Brendan Porath at SB Nation. I tend to agree with that. It does seem like every year we've got five guys at 7-under coming down the stretch. And it's not a knock to the conditions or how tough a test the golf course is or even the redesign. I just think for the first big event, you know, in the continental U.S. every year, it at least should be somewhat exciting. And Rahm tried his hardest to make it exciting. That final round was really impressive. His back 9-30 was incredible, the two eagles. But it always seems to lack the incredible amount of gusto that some of these other events do. The waste management's always fun. Riviera can be a lot of fun, especially late in the rounds on Sunday there. And, of course, even Pebble Beach. I mean, you've got some birdie holes coming down the stretch. But for whatever reason, Torrey Pines does feel too tough for this early in the season. And I'd like to see something done, maybe cut the rough down a little bit, maybe put the pin placements more in the middle of these greens. But it does seem like you get late on Sunday and you're just waiting for the thing to be over. And I wonder if we almost move the event later in the season, if that would help as well, or made it Torrey Pines a FedEx Cup venue, something like that. But nonetheless, a big win from Rahm. Of course, Tiger missing the cut. We wrote about it on golf.com and the Tour Confidential about what to take away from Tiger, what we expect to see this week at the Omega Dubai Desert Classic that he's going to be playing in. I said a good week this week is making the cut for Tiger Woods. He missed the cut last week. You know, he shoots 76 on the South course, but the back 9-39, he makes three birdies. I mean, this guy's capable of putting scores together and having good holes, but it's the bad holes that he's going to have to correct if he wants to not just contend, but make a cut. I mean, you can't be having these stretches of bogey, bogey, double bogey and expect to compete and contend with the current PGA Tour. They're just too good. Phil Mickelson, another great week. In Phil's last 25 events on the PGA Tour, he's finished in the top 25 in 16 of them. Of course, he's trying to win. That's Phil's main goal, but he continues to play solid golf. Phil Mickelson goes out, puts rounds together, has good weeks, week in and week out. It's all coming together as we get closer to major seasons, we get closer to the Masters, get closer to places like Erin Hills. I just feel like Phil knows what he circled on his, you know, on his schedule there and what he wants to win and what he wants to compete in. But putting yourself in contention week in and week out has to be uplifting and positive for Phil, especially coming off the hernia surgery. Just an exciting week, I thought. Exciting 2 weeks, you know, when you go back to Palm Springs. I thought he played great. His game just continues to look impressive at 46 years old. No going away for Phil. I did find it interesting. Phil said John Rahm's one of the best players in the world already after his round when he was asked about his fellow ASUer. said he's one of the best players in the world. I mean, high praise from Phil Mickelson, of course, a multi-major winner and a guy that's won 40-something times on the PGA Tour. So Phil thinks Rahm's the real deal. I think a lot of us believe it, and we got to see it. His clothes, the way these guys are capable of pulling off these golf shots down the stretch just shows really to me the gap between a good player and a professional golfer. I mean, it does seem, you know, when the going gets tough, a lot of these guys can pull these golf shots, and we saw it with Rahm, of course, not just with the birdie on 17, but, you know, able to somehow navigate that bumpy, tough little putt there at the 18th from the back of the green to get it to go for the eagle and eventually the win. So a great win for Rahm. Let me tell you something. If you're in your 30s on the PGA Tour these days, you have to feel like you're almost getting ready for PGA Tour champions. We've seen Justin Thomas win twice already. He's 23 years old. Rahm wins at 22. The PGA Tour is becoming a young man's game for sure. But enough about the PGA Tour. I wanted to talk LPGA this week. Of course, they got going. A great playoff win. Brittany Lincecum coming out victorious there. Some great scores in the Bahamas. I had the LPGA commissioner, Mike Wan, on last week. I got a chance to chat with him about the upcoming season, about some of the controversy surrounding the U.S. Open women's course that they have, and about, you know, the struggle that it seems that women in golf are having with the internet right now. It does seem that, you know, it's objectifying women as opposed to praising their talents. I mean, Brittany Lincecum and Lexi Thompson playing incredible golf this week, and you have to dig to find articles about it. And I wanted to just ask Mike what he thought. He's done a great job with the LPGA. They continue to reach out to places that they didn't reach out to in the past. They go to venues they didn't go to in the past, and it's really coming back. The LPGA is coming back. So enough about this past week on the PGA Tour. Let's talk LPGA. Their commissioner, Mike Wan, here on the Clubhouse. And we now welcome into the Clubhouse the commissioner of the LPGA since 2010, Mike Wan. Mike, 2010, I looked that up and had to look at it twice. That seems almost inaccurate. It just doesn't seem like it's been that long.
Me too. I'm embarrassed to say I'm still making rookie mistakes, and I'm in my eighth year.
Well, let me tell you, it is the LPGA continues to do better and better. So you're obviously doing something right. And of course, the LPGA returned this weekend at the Pure Silk Bahamas LPGA Classic. I just wanted to ask you first, is there anything different that fans should expect to see this year that they've never seen before on the LPGA?
Well, we just keep getting more and more borderless. I mean, you're going to see rookies from Iceland and Ecuador, Belgium, India, Latvia. I had to Google search Latvia between you and I when I first heard. We had 45 different countries tee it up at Q School. So I've talked a lot about the game, especially on the women's side, being borderless and how every week it seems is an Olympic competition anymore. And that's just more and more true. And it's exciting because they're younger, they're stronger, they're winning at an early age, and they're coming from everywhere. So I think when I say that it's the best in the world, I think that's by no means an understatement. And we've always talked about the world watching, but I mean, we just keep adding more and more countries that want to watch us week in and week out, generally because their best female athlete in the country is competing on the LPGA. I think Americans probably take that for granted, but in a lot of these countries, you know, their best female athletes playing here week in and week out, and they want to watch her, and that's why 170 countries watch us every week.
And how important is it for the LPGA to brainstorm and come up with new ideas, similar to something that the European Tour has done? If you look at what the European Tour's done, basically they've given free rein to their social media channels. They've come up with stuff like the little interview with Rory McIlroy last year that did really well, even the prank interviews this past couple of weeks at the HSBC. How important is y'all's brainstorming session between seasons to come up with things to bring a new audience, new viewers, you know, more eyeballs to the LPGA?
Well, it's funny. I mean, I'm probably different than any other commissioner in any other sport when it comes to this, but I think it's probably been 5 years now since we started adding Twitter handles to the back of caddy bibs. And when we first did, you know, everyone asked me, how come you're putting, you know, Paula Creamer or Lydia Ko's Twitter handle? Why don't you put @LPGA on the back? And I said, you know, I'll be honest with you, they're a lot more interesting to follow than us. And if you're following them, you're following us. If you want to watch Lydia Ko or Brooke Henderson or Jessica Korda, we're where you're watching it. So I think it's exciting to see other tours and other sports get more and more behind social media. Usually when you see it happen, and it's driving them to their sport, NBA, NFL, Major League Baseball, PGA Tour. We're just trying to drive you to our athletes, because I think if you follow the best female athletes in the world, you're going to love their stories, you're going to love their personalities, and if you do, then you're going to love the LPGA, because you know we're where to watch them. So I think I'm excited to see everybody else kind of embracing it. I can tell you, 6 years ago when somebody asked me to go on Twitter for the first time, I did it kind of kicking and screaming, but now I can't imagine getting my news clips anywhere else.
And I read that you and Jay Monahan, of course, the new PGA Tour commissioner, y'all talked about a possible merger of sorts with the opening event of each calendar year, the Tournament of Champions on the PGA Tour. I read that there was an idea that maybe some LPGA winners would come as well and compete in the same event. First, how realistic is something like this to happen? And second, how exciting is it for somebody like you? Because the eyeballs to that event, I mean, it's prime time. It has PGA Tour winners. All the big names are there. To have the LPGA involved in something like that has to be really exciting if it comes about.
It is, exactly, Shane. I would tell you that in my 8 years, the biggest lifts that the LPGA has experienced have not been LPGA projects, but rather big partnership projects. And when we got together with the PGA of America and created the Women's PGA and then got together with KPMG, that event became a mega event, not only on our stage, but in terms of what it's doing for women inside and out the ropes. And we partnered with the USGA, and now the fastest growing segment in U.S. golf is girls under the age of 18. Those are things we can't achieve by ourselves. We're not big enough, strong enough, we're not smart enough to do that without a really big partner. So when we sat down with Jay and we started talking about how can we play together as an entity, it'd be good for the media, it'd be good for the fans, we think our players would enjoy it. And yes, one of the top projects on that list is, what about the Tournament of Champions? Wouldn't it be great to see the winners on the men's side, the women's from the women's side, in the first week of January, teeing it off in a place like Kapalua? You know, everything about that makes sense. You know, it's still a small field, even if you had 2025 LPGA winners, but it creates an excitement around both that event and the kind of unofficial start of the golf season that we think would be good for both of us. I'm excited to have Jay in his position. He's full of more new ideas than I have, and that's exciting for everybody.
And when you talk to Jay about an idea like this, I'm assuming he's open to everything, as you mentioned, but I mean, is this something where he sees the benefit for both parties as well, and he's excited for the possibility of this being around in 2018?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not talking him into this idea or holding him hostage to this idea. If I was being totally honest, I would say this is much more Jay's idea than Mike Wann's idea. I think he feels the responsibility in his position as really one of the highest stakeholders in the game of really, you know, having to bring ideas that are going to expand the interest, the audience, and the potential, not only just of viewership, but of the game, to create more interest in the game of golf, both in the States and worldwide. I think Jay says, you know, as he said to me, you know, getting the best female and male athletes together on the same stage and playing in some of the same opportunities is just the right thing to do for the game. And if at the same time we make a tournament better or the media finds it more interesting, well, that's great too. But I think, you know, as you probably know, he and I and a bunch of others are talking about the same kind of opportunities or what ifs if we did it in the Olympics. I mean, what if in the Olympics it wasn't just men's 1 week and women's next week, but could we compete together, men and women, in a medal competition? Haven't figured all that stuff out, but I love the fact that those are topics that are at the top of the list right now as we're talking about the future of the game.
Well, and when you think about the LPGA and female golf in general, you know, some of the biggest eyeball moments, I mean, I think about Annika Sorenstam, you know, in the skins game. I mean, even Lexi Thompson at the Franklin Templeton, we did that for Fox, and Julie Inkster and I were driving around. It was the biggest crowd out there was following Lexi and Bryson in the Franklin Templeton. And I mean, this is an event that, you know, doesn't draw the biggest of eyeballs because it's in a weird time in the schedule. But having someone like Lexi out there, you know, bombing drives and hearing Bryson say after, I had to check my ball a couple times to make sure that was mine and not hers. I mean, this is the stuff to me that not only grows the female side of the game, but it also reminds people how talented and how good these female golfers are. Because at times, I think sometimes you look at it and go, they can't hit it as far, they can't compete. And then you see what Michelle Wee does a week after at Pinehurst. And it reminds everybody just how good they are at this sport and how many female golfers there are out there that are this impressive and this competitive.
Yeah, I never worry about my athletes being able to compete in whatever setting we put them in, because they'll drop jaws no matter when you go. I said anybody who doesn't believe that the best female golfers in the world can compete anywhere just has to come out and play in a pro-am, and they'll change their mind in about two holes. So that's fun. But to your point, I mean, I think half the battle right now in the world of sports and 190 television channels and et cetera, is creating things that are interesting and fun. And when we do things like the Franklin Templeton, the tournament champions we're talking about, the Olympics proved it. When you provide new and different and fun, and we've been doing it at the LPGA for a long time. You know, when we introduced the International Crown, we got together with UL and said, you know, what if we bring something to women's golf that men's golf hasn't seen before? What if we figure out how to play eight countries against each other, where the eight countries can change every year? You know, no selection committee, no way to buy your way in. You just got to play your way in. And we created a 4-day event that no one had ever seen before, and that's quickly become one of our best events. So there's definitely room for big time 4-day stroke play, paydays, and there's definitely room in the game to provide some difference too. Because if that creates both media and fan interest, everybody wins. And I think both Jay and I have been surprised with how much our players support the same kind of thing.
Well, I want to switch gears just for a moment and touch on something that has been, I'd say it's been prominent the last couple of weeks. It's on the heels of a major website coming out with the most beautiful women in golf was basically the link. And a few writers, some former LPGA players, I know somebody from The Big Break wrote a great piece for The Guardian about, you know, the objectifying of females and the focus not being necessarily on their talents on the golf course, but more the way they look. When you see stuff like this being shared around and being shared by major golf outlets, I mean, does it tick you off?
Well, you know, bottom line is I do know that these are young women. They're incredibly fit. I mean, I'm definitely the commissioner in the era of fitness. When you try to walk into a fitness center at 6 o'clock in the morning in one of our tour events, and you're not going to get on a machine. It's just kind of the way it is. So yes, they're good looking and they're successful, athletes. And so I think if that was balanced in a lot of other athletic settings, it'd be much less of a problem. I said this many times, but as a 51-year-old male, I can't learn much from Bubba Watson. I'll never hit a 210-yard 7-iron, no matter how much I read about it in a magazine. But I really do want to understand how Jody Shadoff-Ewart, who may weigh 100 pounds less than me, can hit the ball 275 yards off a tee. I got to be able to learn something from that. And knowing that her and I probably hit the same 7-iron, so how come she can hit it 45% more accurate almost every time? And that's something where I think sometimes the instructional manuals and the rest in the game just tend to forget, which is, everybody who plays in an LPGA program will say the same thing afterwards. We played from the same tees. A lot of time we were hitting the same club. I lost by 25 strokes, but I felt like I played a round of golf with her, and it's just impressive to watch. So it doesn't bother me, and I'm sure it doesn't bother every athlete on the LPGA tour if there's, if somebody wants to point out who looks good versus, versus year ago. But I think that's much more of a problem if that's the only time you cover the LPGA, because there's just an awful lot more to learn about the best 150 females in anything in the world than just what they're wearing or what their workout regimen is.
Yeah, I caddied for Irene Cho a few times, a friend of mine who asked me to kind of come out and help her out a couple of times, and the pro-ams were my favorite day, because you mentioned it, these guys would be so shocked at how good, consistent, and long these players were. I mean, you'd get up there and Irene would hit one with a very simple looking swing and she'd hit it 265 yards or so. And these guys would get up there trying to catch up with her and they couldn't do it. And I always said to her, she has an amazing personality, a very unique personality. And I always said, every pro-am, every event she plays, she gains about 3 to 5 fans automatically, because they just love being around her and the golf game. And the respect grows immediately, because you're seeing somebody that hits the golf club in such a precise spot on the golf club. They literally don't need the full face of the club. They just need that sweet spot. That's how consistent players like, Irene and a lot of the LPGA is. And that's something that I wonder about you. You're around these players. You're seeing how consistent, how talented they are. And then when you do see this stuff, do you urge outlets or ask outlets to maybe focus a little bit more on their golf games as well, when you see stuff like, most beautiful women in golf or sexiest women in golf? Do you urge them to focus something else on their playing abilities as well?
Yeah, I don't think I need to be the voice of somebody always complaining when somebody chooses a 25 most anything in golf. But I definitely want to be the person that says, if you're if you're talking about, you know, if you're talking about curing the slice or how to hit it close from 95 yards, there's more choices than the four you keep using for the last decade. and if you don't believe me, come to any pro am, just ask the, you know, ask the 500 guys who just walked off 18 about what they experienced. Just like you said, I mean, pro am day is always an eye opening day on the LPGA, and it's for two reasons. One is you're going to see some of the best golf you've ever witnessed close up, you know, bar none, period, no matter where you've played and how many pro ams you've played in. And you're going to really get to know a pro. You're going to become friends. You're going to tweet them. They're going to tweet you back. It's a pretty social group. I've said this many times. I think the best asset about the LPGA, beyond talent, is it's a pretty friendly group. As you probably know, it's a pretty approachable group, and you play from the same tees. You generally play the same game. So the interaction between amateurs and pros at the LPGA is just like it is at no other sport. As I say to sponsors all the time, you can sponsor the NBA and you'll get great tickets and good parking, but nobody's going to ask you to. Nobody's going to have you having dinner with the pros. No one's going to have you part of the shoot around at the LPGA. You're going to be part of the tournament week with the pros. And that's an opportunity you just don't get in any other sport.
Well, and last thing on this, you know, we're living in a time where social media personalities have massive followings and none more really, if you think about it, than in female golf. I mean, some of these, you know, social media presences have millions of followers and millions upon millions of impressions, basically meaning, you know, when they go to something, it makes a mark. And I wanted to ask you, how do you balance inviting someone like this to an event, knowing the eyeballs will come and knowing that if you do that, you might upset some players that are looking to get in, you know, if there's a spot open or somebody that's, you know, just on the outside of getting into the event with the numbers or where they're on the alternate list?
Well, you know, each tournament has already got a pre-established LPGA number and a pre-established sponsor invite number. So players know well before a tournament comes up where they stand on the LPGA list. And a typical tournament has two sponsor invites. So, you know, if there's 144 players in the field, 142 of them are going to be LPGA players. So I think even the players would admit they got the best end of that deal. I mean, if you play well, you deserve to play in LPGA events. But we always want a sponsor to be able to create a local story, an international story, whatever story they want to bring, you know, to the tournament. But the overwhelming amount of players in that tournament are just that. I think what would probably surprise some of the listeners here today is that I think we're the only sport in the world when these players show up to play, the first thing they get is a 5x7 card. And it essentially describes everything about the check writer that week. Who are they? Why are they doing this? What's important to them? We suggest what you tweet in Facebook this week or Instagram. I always say you can tweet 1,000 times, but if you just tweet about this, and to your point, with some of their followings, it's the size of an ad campaign. We tell them, we show them pictures of who the most important people are from the check writing company that week, and we give them an address on where to send their handwritten thank you card back to the CEO. I've said this many times, but I'm pretty sure LeBron James, when he shows up tonight at the game, isn't going to get a 5x7 card telling about the new bank that joined and could he please write a thank you card and tweet this. They just don't do that, and I love the fact that people chuckle when I say that, because if other athletes don't want to appreciate, you know, the people, or other leagues don't want to appreciate the people that are writing checks to them, those leagues, that's perfect, because that's really then what'll consistently separate the LPGA. I've said this many times, when you hand a big cardboard check to an LPGA player, the first person she'll thank almost 100% of the time is whoever signed that check. A lot of people will tell me, well, NASCAR is really good at that too. I said, no, they climb out of the car and they thank everybody on their chest, their hat, their sleeve. They don't thank the sponsor of the race. At the LPGA, they sponsor the person that put us on the first tee in the first place, and then they can go on to thank whoever. But I think that makes us different from an athlete appreciation perspective.
Yeah, and I mean, what are you seeing with sponsors when they come to you guys for the first time after an event, when they're getting these thank you notes, they're getting calls and messages from the actual players in the event? I mean, are you seeing the turnover pretty consistent in the sense of sponsors wanting to come back?
Well, yeah, that's the best part. I mean, what I'll tell a new sponsor who's thinking about the LPGA is, I'll say, hey, do you want to talk to somebody else who's sponsoring the LPGA? And they always go, yeah. And I say, tell you what, rather than me giving you a reference list, because, you know, I'm just going to pick out the people I like, why don't you just look at our schedule or watch a commercial or go to our website? You pick out brands that are doing something with the LPGA, and I'll let you talk to their CEO or CFO or chief sales officer. You don't have to take my advice. Talk to somebody. I mean, when I was a check writer, I wanted to know what it felt like to be a check writer. right into that sport. So if you take care of them, if you make the tournament about them and not about us, I mean, I've said many times, I've written a check to a lot of sports, and usually at the end, they cash it. They do what was legally required on the agreement. But I'm not really sure they tried to understand my business. What most sponsors of the LPGA will tell you is the LPGA took time to try to figure out what I needed to get out of this sponsorship, and then took a lot of time trying to figure out how to better do that year after year. When I talked to a CEO, he says, Mike, I just got 82 handwritten thank you cards. I don't really know what to do with this. Can't throw these away. These are pretty cool. What do you think? And I was like, I don't care what you do with it. I just love the fact that they read them, they finish them, and they just can't throw them away. As I tell players, text messages and emails are great, but hitting delete is an automatic response. When you get 50 letters this morning in your inbox, and they're all from different players whose name you recognize, all saying something a little different, it changes the way you feel, not only about your LPGA sponsorship, but the way you feel about other sponsorships, because you mentally say to yourself, how many millions of dollars have I spent a year on that sponsorship? And no one's ever really thanked me. And that's exactly what we're trying to create.
Mike, what's the biggest misconception about the LPGA?
Well, I've said this many times. I think sports, and this is, you know, this is a Mike Wanism, so you can put this under complete BS or just what he thinks, but I think sports tend to follow their stereotype of a sport tends to follow the truth about 5 to 10 years ago. So if you say NBA and I say, oh gosh, kind of thugs choking the coach and the, I'm 10 to 15 years removed. That was true at a time,
right?
But that's not Kevin Durant or LeBron James. Or if you said to me baseball and I said, geez, cork bats and trying to beat the anti-doping system. And that was true, you know, 10 or so years ago, not true at all today. So I'm just caught in a stereotype that's not based on today's truth. And if you say LPGA to somebody, they'll say, ah, oh, geez, players from all over the world, you know, a lot from Asia, they don't speak the language, hard to relate to. And I'd say that's really true if you were trying to describe the LPGA in 2005. Completely not true if you're trying to describe the tour 10 years later, because today we do have players from all over the world. The average winning age on tour last year was 22. So we're talking about super young, super talented players from all over the world. It's pretty hard to walk the range at the LPGA and not have a conversation like you and I are having right now. These players come to the LPGA. They already speak the language. They already have places in the States. They're already fully aware of a global tour schedule. They're comfortable with the media. It's a different time and place. And I always say that, you know, you could let me be the commissioner in 1985, which I'm sure was great. You had TV coverage in America and Europe. You had players from America and Europe. And it was a really easy thing to navigate. Or you could let me be the commissioner today. We have players from 50 countries. You're televised in 170 countries. You play in 16 countries. Yes, that's not easy. That's a little more challenging. But we also have fans, sponsors, websites, television that you just couldn't fathom before. We every week is a little Olympics. And that, I think if you offer which sport you think is the better for the future, I'll take B. And most of my commissioner compadres would do the same. I mean, think of how much money baseball, football, basketball is spending to try to make their sport more global. We are decades ahead of that and only getting better.
Well, and that opens up to my next question. The LPGA, of course, spends a ton of time in other parts of the world. I was in South Korea a few months ago. There was a channel dedicated to women's golf. I mean, that, you know, it's a very different world than what we're seeing over here in the U.S. What would be your ideal mix between events in the States and events overseas? Would it be 50-50? Would it be more overseas?
We're at it about now. We're somewhere between 60-40 and 65-35 North America to overseas. I've said this many times. I want to be an awful lot like companies that sponsor us. And what I mean by that is I want to be global. I want the world to be my customer and my consumer. But I want to be based somewhere. I want to have a hometown. I want people to aspire to be part of the base company. So I have players from all over the world, but they move here. They move to America. They learn the language. They shop here. They buy homes here. And I want to make sure I build enough of a North American base in our tournament schedule that everyone continues to do that. What I don't want to do is potentially wake up and be tennis, where players are from all over the world, but they generally live wherever they grew up, and they fly into a tournament and then they all fly home to 26 different countries and homes. Don't really hang together as a group. It's really not a tour per se. And you know, for us, we're pretty close. I remember going to Brittany Lincecum's wedding and looking around thinking, there's like 10, 15 different countries right here in the same table I'm sitting sitting at. And it just made me realize that, you know, we're a lot different than we were in 2009, 2010. We're all one big dysfunctional family. We travel around the world together. We're learning and making a bunch of mistakes together. But we're really changing the face of golf, certainly on the women's side, to realizing that this is, there's no other sport like this in terms of just having the world's both attention and aspiration.
Well, just a couple more and I'll let you go. I know you've got a lot going on, but something I have noticed, the commitment to a smaller market when tournaments are played in the United States, you know, Rogers, Arkansas, Des Moines, even Carlsbad, California, not a lot of big, big sporting events happen there. Has that been a conscious effort for you guys to move to maybe a smaller market? Because when I, like I told you, when I caddied, I mean, that Arkansas event was packed, and that event in Oregon was packed, and even the one outside of San Francisco, I think it was in, it was just right outside San Francisco. But I mean, there was huge, huge throngs of fans there. I mean, is this something you guys have focused on, knowing that it's a little bit easier to get fans to come out if you're not in LA or, you know, Phoenix or Dallas, if you go to a smaller spot?
We don't focus on it, but we encourage it. And what I mean by that is I let the check writer tell me where can we play to make the most difference on your business in terms of what you're trying to achieve in the sponsorship. So I met with Chicago Mercantile Exchange in Chicago thinking I was working on a Chicago event. We play their event in Naples because they have their big season-ending conference in Naples. Obviously, you meet with Kia in Korea, but you play an event in Carlsbad because it was really about growing their North American Kia business. So sometimes I think I know exactly what I'm trying to achieve. And at the end of the day, it's really got to be about the check writer. But when asked, and oftentimes I am, if somebody says to me, hey, Mike, we really want to play this in Southern California, what do you think? I'll say something like, hey, what do you think about Carlsbad? Something in between a San Diego and an LA.
Right.
Or if somebody from, if somebody says to me, what do you think about an event in Detroit? I said, what do you think about Ann Arbor? You know, pretty close to Detroit, but something that a smaller market could really own. Because you're right. I mean, I think when we are kind of a big event in a small town, we tend to not only succeed there, but we tend to succeed there forever. You know, we've been going to Portland for 40 something years and Palm Springs and Toledo, because when we show up, we don't stay in the Marriott Marquis and take, you know, airport shuttles over to the golf course and back and please don't talk to the athletes. Most of our athletes are staying in homes, so are caddies. They're getting to know the volunteers. And so after 5, 6, 7 years, we become kind of a part of the community, part of the fabric. I can't tell you how many players will tell me on Thanksgiving, I'll say to them, where'd you go on Halloween? And they'll say, I flew back to such and such because I go trick-or-treating with my host family. Host family is a pretty normal term on the LPGA. So we create friendships, like you say, in Arkansas. When people stay in Arkansas, they all ride in on the different golf carts or the houses they're staying in. It's just very family. So we do really well in those smaller markets, one, because they really embrace us. And in those situations, we do the same, and they just tend to last a little longer.
Well, I'll get my last question, and it's going to be an exciting one for you, I'm sure. It's going to be about President Trump. So I knew you're not getting out of here without one Trump question. You guys had an interesting history dating back to the Women's British in 2015. There was, you know, questions about a move from Turnberry, eventually stayed at Turnberry. Trump kind of fired back. Now he's the president, and to be honest, I would say there might not be somebody that's been a bigger advocate for the LPGA over the years. I mean, this is a guy that, you know, has close friends. He had Natalie Golba speak at the convention. I mean, he seems to really embrace the LPGA. Is it exciting for you guys to have somebody in office like this that seems to really, really like the tour and want to promote it?
Well, I get it. I mean, Trump's a lightning rod. If you say something positive, you get 1,000 negative calls. And you say something negative, you get 1,000 positive calls. But the reality of it is, I mean, I get these calls all the time saying, you know, why did you guys do these legal agreements with Trump? And, you know, since I've been here, we've never had an agreement with Trump. Now, we do have a lot of tournaments that aren't owned and run by the LPGA. We're invited to. So in the case of the Eureka Women's British Open, that was owned and run by the Ladies Scottish Union. They did a deal with Trump Turnberry. That's where they wanted to host the event. I say the same thing now about the U.S. Women's Open that I said then. I mean, the Ladies Golf Union has been a friend and partner to the LPGA for 50 years. They're one of the greatest drivers of women's golf in the U.K. So when they say this is where we're set to play, that's where we go play. In the case of the USGA, I mean, a 100-year partner, I talked to Mike Davis and I said, Mike, if this is the right thing to do and you're good with it, you believe this is the right venue, we're 100% in as well. We're not going to, regardless of how people vote, we're not going to let politics get in the way of opportunities for the best couple hundred women in the world. And you're right. It's probably good for the game to have somebody in the White House who doesn't just play golf, but is invested in golf in a significant way. That doesn't mean you have to agree with the politics one way or the other. It doesn't mean how you voted. It's just from our perspective, we're not trying to make a political statement with the U.S. Women's Open, nor were we with the Ricoh Women's British Open. We're trying to play some of the biggest golf tournaments in the world on some of the best venues in the world. And if one of my partners has done a legal agreement to play at a Trump venue and that's where they want to play, that's exactly where we're going to play.
Well, I think that was well said, Mike. I really appreciate the time. Excited for 2017. As you mentioned, the LPGA continues to get younger and younger. It'll be interesting to see, you know, some of these 20-somethings battling it out. Plus, I keep telling Julie Inkster she needs to come back for one more run at the Women's British Open. I want her to win that. I told her I'd loop for her, but I appreciate it. I'll catch up with you down the road.
Yeah, I would tell you that it's never been a better time. We got, you know, the top five players in the world come from five different countries. Our five major winners last year came from five different countries. There were six podium spots in the Olympics last year, and there was six different countries in those podium spots. So it's whether you're an American, European, from Australia, Korea, Japan, Malaysia, there's something to watch, and it's an exciting time in the women's game.
Well, thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Shane.
It looks like I'm a wreck. It's in the hole! It's in the hole!
Just a quick minute to tell you about OGO, the leader in golf bags and backpacks on the web. I'm a backpack guy, and I need one that has a lot of pockets and a lot of places where I know my stuff will be safe and secure. The Renegade by OGO is exactly that. Features something called a reactive suspension system that cradles your laptop if you accidentally drop it or have it tumble out of an overhead bin. They have a padded camera pocket, deluxe panel pockets, a hybrid unibody back panel so you aren't hurting with all that stuff on your shoulders. The Renegade is so professional that other travelers will feel disappointed in themselves as they see you put this bad boy on the security conveyor belt. OGO.com. Go check out the Renegade and much, much more right there. Well, that'll do it for the Clubhouse here. We might have another Clubhouse podcast episode a little later in this week with a very big name in sports broadcasting. He is getting prepared for something that is a lot bigger than a non-major golf tournament, but we're trying to dig out some time with him. So check back maybe around Wednesday for a possible other Clubhouse podcast. If not, we'll be back next week. Just a reminder, follow us on all the social medias. You can follow me at Shane Bacon. You can follow the Clubhouse podcast at the Clubhouse Pod. We also have a newsletter that's been getting pretty decent praise from people that have signed up so far, the Clubhouse newsletter. If you go to either of those Twitter accounts, pinned right atop the page is a link to sign up for the newsletter. It hits your inboxes on Monday morning, Wednesday morning. Monday is more of a recap type of feel. Wednesday gets you looking ahead at the event that week. But my goal and my idea here is to simply get you all your news, information, TV times, odds on the winner of the PGA Tour event, who's playing in certain events on the European Tour and PGA Tour, notable players in those fields, just to really give you a good outline on the week that is golf and the week that was golf as we wrap up events there on Sunday. So check out the newsletter, the Clubhouse newsletter. Tell your friends if you haven't already. If you love the podcast, give us a subscribe and write a review. It really helps out us on this side of things. Plus, good news if you're still listening, by the way. Thank you very much. And we finally got in our Clubhouse koozies. I've got about 300 sitting just to my left right here. If you want one, just send us a note there on the Clubhouse Pod Twitter account. Say something creative, say something fun. All we're asking is if we send one out, just send us a picture back on Twitter with you using it for the first time. They're fun. They're cool. Hopefully, they'll keep your beer cold and your hands warm. Clubhouse koozies now available, and they cost you nothing. Have a great week. Hopefully, we will talk with you guys again a little later this week. If not, we will see you next week. Get around and make some birdies.